The update from One Bills Drive. It is day two of the NCAA men's basketball tournament with games underway. In the first half in Columbus, Ohio, Iowa leads Cincinnati. Cincinnati leads Iowa 34-29. That game's still in the first half. And Oklahoma, 9 seed, leads 8 seed Ole Miss 29-18 in the first half of their game. That one going on as well today in the NCAA tournament. The UB Bulls play this afternoon, 4 o'clock. UB, the 6 seed against 11 seed Arizona State. UB going in as the highest seed by a MAC program since the field expanded in 1985. Obviously, a matchup between current UB head coach Nate Oates and his predecessor Bobby Hurley. The Bulls go into the tournament with 31 wins, 3 losses. It's on at 4 o'clock today on TNT, UB against Arizona State. The UB women in action in the NCAA tournament at 4:30 this afternoon. They are in Connecticut, in Storrs, Connecticut. They'll play 7 seed Rutgers today at 4:30 p.m. The second MAC championship in UB women's history, making their third trip in 4 seasons to the NCAA tournament. Buffalo Bills still auditioning free agents. Former Bengals tight end Jake Fisher scheduled to work out for the Bills here in Orchard Park today, according to ESPN. He was in Washington yesterday. Fisher, a second-round pick by the Bengals in 2015 as a tackle, now getting ready to move to tight end. Recruited to Oregon as a tight end before moving to tackle during college. Jake Fisher reportedly meeting with the Buffalo Bills today. The Indianapolis Colts signed former Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Justin Houston to a contract last night. The four-time Pro Bowler gets a 2-year, $24 million deal. NFL Competition Committee has released two versions of a modified expansion of instant replay. Both call for a 1-year trial before any permanent decisions are made. NFL owners meeting in Arizona over the next couple of days to look at these proposals to expand the use of instant replay. And the Buffalo Sabres getting set for a 3-game road trip after practice today. It starts tomorrow night in Montreal. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Chris Brown. Chris is in for Steve Tasker. Joining us on the line, as he does every Friday right about this time, we're on the line with the executive producer and analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films, Greg Cosell, on the line with us. Hi, Greg. John Murphy and Chris here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on.
Murph, Chris, how you guys doing?
Doing good.
Great. Hey, this is going to be a bit of a curveball because we didn't talk about this before, but it struck me a moment ago. Do you know much at all about Jake Fisher, the tackle/tight end who the Bills have in on a free agent visit today? Does that name resonate with you, a former second-round pick a few years ago?
Oh, yeah. He was. I remember when he was drafted, the Bengals took a tackle in the first round as well, and then Fisher in the second round with the intention of those guys would end up being their starting tackles as they move forward. Neither player has worked out, and neither player obviously is with the Bengals. Fisher, obviously, he became sort of a sixth offensive lineman slash tight end as his career progressed, but he's certainly not a starting offensive tackle, or he would have been one in Cincinnati.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I want to ask you about our guest from last hour, Adrian Waddle, former Patriots and Lions offensive lineman who the Bills signed last Saturday. What do you know about him? What do you think of that signing, Greg?
I think it's a good signing, particularly for a team that needs offensive line help and competition. The most important thing, as you know, guys, is now competition in that unit, because that unit struggled a year ago. It's obviously going to have a different look this year with a number of signings, and they're continuing to try to get better, which is the right thing to do. Waddle's had significant starts at right tackle in this league. I believe he's a 2-time Super Bowl champion. I think that's a very good move to increase competition. He may end up being the starting right tackle. He had starts when he got in the league with Detroit, and he started for the Patriots.
Right. Well, I mean, that's not the main reason we've got you here, Greg. As we know, you're pouring over film here in preparation for the draft, which is, 6 weeks away from yesterday?
Less than that, 5 weeks from
yesterday. 5 weeks from yesterday.
5 weeks.
And I'll blow by the first guy that we had on our list, because I know there's a self-proclaimed fan of his to my right. A.J. Brown is an interesting receiver, and put together a pretty good career.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like he's kind of getting forgotten in the conversation because of all the Metcalf talk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that on tape, I really liked him. I actually watched him last summer from some of his 2017 tape. And then, of course, I watched him within the last month or so his 2018 tape. And what I thought was really good for him is that when Metcalf got hurt down there, is Brown then played a number of snaps outside, because last year he was almost exclusively a slot receiver, and he was almost exclusively a slot receiver through 7-8 games of the 2018 season. And then he moved outside and even played snaps at the X, the single receiver to the boundary usually, and I thought he handled himself well. He's a very good route runner. There's a savvy to him. He's got very good hands. He's tough. He's got competitive toughness. He was a guy, Chris, the more I watched, the more I liked him. I think he'll be a quality NFL receiver. I think he'll probably play more in the slot than outside, but I like the player.
I wonder, we've talked a lot about Metcalf on this show, Greg, and I wonder how much of Metcalf's, I got to say, lack of production, but lack of big number production anyway at Ole Miss has to do with A.J. Brown on the other side. I mean, there's only so much air in the room, right?
Well, Metcalf was hurt too.
Yep.
Metcalf, I think, missed both his I know he missed a good part of this past season. I think he was hurt the year before as well. Metcalf's an interesting guy because of the size, speed, height. I mean, he's size, he's got speed, he's 228 pounds at the combine. You know, his 40-yard dash was ridiculous, although a lot of his agility drills were not very good. He's very straight line, but he did run by SEC corners, and he ran by SEC corners often when they were in off coverage. So he's an explosive vertical dimension, and you start to think of comparisons, you know, those bigger guys who can run, the Mike Evans, the Josh Gordons. If you think back a few years to a Vincent Jackson, you start thinking of those kinds of receivers when you think of Metcalf. But Metcalf's a little stiff, and he needs a lot of work as a route runner.
See, and with that in mind, like if you're looking for instant impact and you're drafting high, how would you rate Metcalf in comparison to Brown, who you've pretty much spelled out, has at least shown in his college career that he can do maybe a few more things than Metcalf, who some people, at least critics of his, might peg as a one-trick pony, at least right now in his career coming out?
Well, Chris, then I think it depends on your team and what you're looking for, because I think Brown, he's played predominantly in the slot and showed he could play outside. Metcalf is an outside receiver who can run. So it depends what kind of receiver you want for your team, based on all the other variables that you have on your team. So they're different kinds of players. That's why it's always hard for me, and people who know me know this, it's hard for me to make lists, because it's very hard to compare players who will fill different roles as you project them to the NFL.
Hey, Greg, how much, and I'm going to get back to some of these individual receivers in a minute here, but do all of them, most of them, need significant development time? In other words, do we expect much out of rookie receivers, or like Metcalf, do they have things that they're really going to have to work on to get to the top level of NFL talent?
Well, I think, Murph, as a general rule, they all need work. There's a huge difference between college and the NFL. Some are more refined than others. I think Brown has a certain route running savvy that I think will serve him well early on. Metcalf is more of a one-trick pony at this point. It's a good trick, but he's a one-trick pony. You know, I think every player needs some kind of refinement. It's a different game. The whole symmetry of the field is different due to the hash marks. The quality of the players are different. The quality and the detail of schemes and tactics are far greater in the NFL than they are in college. So I think everybody needs work. No one comes to the NFL a finished product.
Greg Cosell on the line with us. He's executive producer, analyst of ESPN NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Some of these others on the list, Marquise Brown from Oklahoma. What do you make of him? What have you seen of him on tape, Greg?
Now, he's an explosive guy. And, you know, the big issue with him, and then you have to decide again how you use him, is that he's 166 pounds. So he's even smaller than someone like T.Y. Hilton. But I think that comparison makes sense. Hilton moves all over the formation for the Indianapolis Colts. I think you'll see Brown do the same thing. But he's got incredible explosiveness as a vertical receiver, and that's always in demand in the league. And the other thing is, he ran a ton of shallow crossers at Oklahoma, and he's got that explosive run after catch if you hit him in stride. He can run away from the defense. We know he's not a big man. He may not be a volume receiver, but he's certainly a vertical dimension. Look, you think back a few years when the Houston Texans drafted Will Fuller, I believe, with the 20th pick in the draft. Vertical speed always sells. It's always in demand.
Looking at the guy that got a lot of pub out west, which was N'Keal Harry, the things that stand out about him, just watching some of his games this year, really good on releases, it seems, with his hands. And then after the catch, I mean, he can do some good things out there, it seems, whether he's running people over. And there's some kind of deceptive elusiveness at times with his game. I don't know. Maybe the Pac-12 doesn't know how to defend anybody. But those are some of the things that I saw. What did you see on tape there?
Well, I think the run after catch is a strength. He's obviously big. He was just under 6'3", weighed 228. He can jump and go up and get it. The only issue for me, and it's a big issue, and then now you get down to scheming with your approach, is he struggled to separate and win versus man coverage in college, Chris. So now the question is he going to separate and win versus man coverage in the NFL?
I'm going to go with no, with probably.
Yeah, the answer would likely be no. You can help him with that with your scheme, but at the end of the day, at some point, he's going to have to win. Now, I almost see him more as an inside receiver in the NFL. A conventional slot where there's twins, two receivers to one side, and the inside slot to trips when there's three receivers as the innermost receiver to the trip side. I almost feel like he's better suited to do that than to line up as an outside receiver.
Another good-sized receiver, North Carolina State, Kelvin Harmon, a big, tall, strong guy. What have you seen of him on video, Greg?
Yeah, now, he's a guy I struggled a little bit with, and I know some people really like him. He's very tough. He's competitive. That always projects well. He's got a big body. He's got body control. He's got hands. I just, the more I watched him, I thought he was very, very measured. I don't think he'll be a vertical guy. I think maybe he's an Alshon Jeffrey type, which is certainly not a bad thing. But there were times I thought he was very stiff, very upright. I didn't think he was very fluid. He didn't run particularly well. I think he's more of a big body, toughness, competitiveness receiver. Uh-huh. And like I said, if he's Alshon Jeffrey, that's fine. But I don't think he's a dynamic, explosive guy.
Another guy that was getting a lot of pub down at the Senior Bowl and put together a good week was Deebo Samuel, the South Carolina kid. Now, this is a guy that probably doesn't have – you know, the measurables of some of these bigger receivers, but man, I mean, this guy is dynamic. I mean, he's elusive out there. He almost looks like a running back at wide receiver, don't you think, Greg?
Oh yeah. I mean, he's under 6 feet, but he weighs 214 and he ran well. And I mean, he's got a compact build. I think he's got explosive traits, Chris. I think you can line him up inside. I think you can line him up outside. He's got short area quickness. I think he's got long speed, deceptive long speed. I like him. I think he's a really interesting prospect. And guys, that's the key word, prospect. You know, we all get caught up, myself included, in saying they're great players. They're all prospects at this point because they haven't played in the league. But, you know, I think that he's very good run after catch. He's got quickness. He's got elusiveness. He's got physicality. He's got power. I like Deebo Samuel as a prospect.
A lot of people like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from Stanford. A lot of people commend his route-running ability. What do you think, Greg?
Well, he was almost used as a basketball player at times, the way he would literally box people
post up,
and then go up and get the ball. You know, I think his vertical ability is a little deceptive with his size and his stride length. The question is, can he get on top of NFL corners? He's certainly got size, and he's got contested catch ability. That's what they do. They work him outside the numbers, and he, as I said, sometimes will just try to box out corners. The question is whether he can do that in the NFL. He's kind of a one-speed guy. So, you know, I'm not sure about him. I think that he'll be interesting. My guess is, Murph, he'll be all over people's draft boards.
Yeah.
It just seems, Greg, that in this year's wide receiver class, there's a healthy number of measurable guys in terms of size. But everybody's got their pock marks on them, and there are even some, like Miles Boykin here is a perfect example. Here's a size kid out of Notre Dame, but, I mean, the word on him is raw, very raw. So you've got to make more of a projection on a kid like that, don't you?
Well, I personally like Boykin more than I like Arcega Whiteside. So, I mean, you know, Boykin was a guy I've watched a lot of, and I think he's a really, really interesting prospect. I mean, you know, I think that he eventually can become an X receiver in the NFL, the boundary X. I think he works the boundary well. He makes back shoulder and contested catches. He's got stride length. Obviously, guys like that, the one big issue was getting off good press coverage. He struggled with that at times. He needs work on that. And again, as I said, all these guys need work in something, so no one comes in polished. But I personally like Miles Boykin more than I like Arcega Whiteside.
Greg, is there a developing prototypical NFL wide receiver? Because as you mentioned, there's a lot of different body types here, a lot of different styles of receiver. Is there one way that the league is going that they're going to be looking for this type of receiver in the future, or is the door wide open?
Well, I think everybody would tell you that big and fast is better than small and fast.
Right.
But there's not a lot of guys who are necessarily big and fast. You know, there's not a lot of Julio Jones out there. So size is always a good thing, particularly since most NFL corners, with some exceptions obviously, are probably in the 5'11 to 6'1 range. So you start getting 6'3, 6'4 receivers, and you can start working the boundary with the contested catches, the back shoulder throws. So yeah, big receivers are always going to be in demand, but then so is small and fast, like Marquise Brown. Fast is always in demand as well because of the vertical dimension. Everybody would like to be able to cause the defense to have to allocate an extra player to deal with a vertical dimension. So there's no prototype, but you know, big is a good thing.
Yeah. And last thing I have for you, do any of these receivers look like early rounds? Look like a possible fit for the Buffalo Bills? You know what the Bills are looking for. You know what, you know, they signed Beasley and Brown in free agency. Do any of these guys look like they were tailor-made for what the Bills Josh Allen might provide?
Yeah, I would think the Bills would be looking for some size, because right now they have John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Foster. So they don't have any size. So I would think that the Bills would be, you know, I mean, I guess they have Zay Jones as well, and he's pretty big. But to me, I think in this particular group, I'd be anxious to see how he gets used. But I think they would love to get a big outside receiver. And then it depends on who you like. You know, maybe they like N'Keal Harry. Maybe they like, yeah, I don't know who they like. But I would think, Murph, that they'd be looking for some size at the wide receiver position at this point.
Now, what's next for you? What position group? You don't just work on one position group at a time, right?
Oh, God, no.
You do everything.
No. You know, I've sort of been working on defense now, because this is a defensive draft, and there's just it's aggravating, Murph, because, you know, there's too many teams that have like seven guys on defense, and you can't watch seven guys at one time. So it's it becomes tough. Yeah. Like, I think Kentucky had like eight defensive players at the combine.
Yeah. Let's talk defense next week. Let's talk maybe edge rushers next week, or even interior
sure.
guys. All right.
Sure. I've seen a bunch.
Okay. We'll talk next week. Greg, thanks for this. We appreciate it.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thank you.
Greg Cosell, the executive producer analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, getting us set for the draft less than 5 weeks away. He lives this stuff. He breathes this stuff, Chris Brown.
I couldn't do it. Watching the same tape seven times in a row for one guy, next guy. Oh, let me watch the DT now. Oh, let me watch the Dan. Oh, my God, no. Let me watch two or three games, get a general assessment of what the player can and cannot do, and go from there.
That's you and I do that. We're called dilettantes. We just sort of dabble in this stuff.
Blind. I swear I would lose my eyesight if I did it. I would.
Thanks to Greg Cosell for joining us. Chris Brown is here. Coming back with more in a moment. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown is in for Steve Tasker. Again, our thanks to Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films, for joining us, going through the wide receiver prospects. We'll do that now. We've got, four more Fridays until the draft, so we'll get through position groups. It's funny, a month ago, I would say, Chris, we were all about the wide receiver core in this draft and who the Bills need, who the Bills want. And I mentioned to you yesterday, I think, it just changed. It has changed dramatically now where we are from where we were 2 weeks ago, right, when free agency began, right, as far as what the Bills' needs are and what their focus might be going into the draft in 5 weeks.
And while I think Greg is right that the Bills wouldn't mind adding some size to their receiving core. I don't get the sense that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to pigeonhole themselves into that specific type of receiver. I think if there's a receiver that they just flat out like, they're going to take him and find a place for him. But, you know, size is something that could be added because, I mean, Robert Foster and Zay Jones are 6'2 and 6'1. Everybody else is under that.
Short.
Duke Williams is big. He's 6'3, 225. So there's your size. But you're talking about a CFL receiver, and he was enormously productive up north. But we know this is a different game down here, so we'll just have to see how that plays out. And, you know, there, I mean, Deebo Samuel, man, I watched his tape, early this week, and I watched three of his games, and he was the playmaker for South Carolina against Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
If you can make plays against Clemson the way he did, I mean, he came on a drag pattern across the field and then turned it up the field, and he ran over the cornerback. And I'm watching him going, this guy is like a receiver in a running back's body.
Yep.
He's pretty impressive. So the three games I watched of him, I like him a lot.
Yep. He jumped out at me at the Senior Bowl, I will say that. And in his case, it was because of the plays he was making, but his body type, Chris. I mean, he's kind of built low to the ground. He's only 6 foot tall. He's only 210 pounds,
right.
But he's thick.
But yeah,
on the bottom half there, he's thick, which you're right. He looks like a running back. And I thought, watching him at the Senior Bowl, I thought, that's an interesting body type for a receiver. And you can see how after the catch, he'd be a really valuable guy to have.
Yeah, because he's, you know, low to the ground and shifty, but his contact balance is so good, too. Like, he could get, you know, like you see these tackles all too often, even at the NFL level, where the guys try to make that kill shot and dive in and nail a guy in the hip with a shoulder pad. This is a guy that's just going to bounce 3 feet to the right and keep going because his contact balance is very good also. There's a lot of things to like about Samuel. I haven't gotten to too many of these other guys yet. I'm just starting on the wide receivers, but I liked what I saw from him big time. I
mean,
exciting player.
Cool. We'll get him on some other position groups as the weeks move ahead as we get a little bit closer to the draft. In the meantime, let's talk with you about the Buffalo Bills and how they are set up right now anyway in the AFC East. That's our Twitter poll. Which team, Bills or Jets, which team is most ready to compete for a wild card spot? We say wild card. We mean playoffs, obviously. We don't want to eliminate the possibility of a division title. That could happen as well. But if you're talking Bills and Jets, more likely that one of those two has a chance to compete for a wild card spot. And on the Twitter poll, we want to know from you which team is more likely to compete for a wild card spot. 86% of our respondents, more than 1,000 respondents so far, say it's the Bills. Only 14% say the Jets. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can ring us up, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Plenty of phone lines open to discuss this. There's an interesting tweet that crossed our paths. We're talking with Adrian Waddle, Bill's offensive lineman, in the first hour of the show about an hour ago, talking about he and his wife visiting Niagara Falls right after the Super Bowl on their way to Michigan, where apparently they have some family in Michigan. His wife tweeted out a couple of weeks ago how much she loved just last week, how much she loved their visit to Niagara Falls and the irony of him signing here with the Buffalo Bills. Paul Deister is the longtime mayor of the city of Niagara Falls, and he tweeted this in, believe it or not. Thank you, Adrian Waddle and One Bills Live, for the great plug on the beauty of Niagara Falls in winter. Niagara Falls, USA, 100% Buffalo Bills country. Welcome to the Bills family. Hashtag frozen falls. I wonder if they're still frozen. But thank you, Mayor Deister, for sending that in, listening to the show. Like what he heard from Adrian Waddle.
How about that?
Have you spent much time in the falls lately? It's definitely worth the trip.
Yeah, when was I up there? I was up there a couple of months ago.
Wintertime, then.
I also took my family up to see that fireworks competition right around New Year's, I want to say. Somewhere between Christmas and New Year's. They had a fireworks competition. It was on the Canadian side, but we were watching it from the U.S. side.
Oh, I do remember that.
And it was pretty entertaining. You know, it was peculiar that the U.S. did not field a team to compete. So it was interesting. You know, it's like Japan and China and Italy and like Canada and a few other countries. But it was a good show. I mean, I hate those fireworks shows where it's like one, 45-second pause. One. 45 seconds. I mean, I want a show.
You're in action.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up downstate, so I used to go by the East River and watch the fireworks show in New York Harbor. I mean, that's pretty involved. I mean, it's like half hour of nonstop action. And then, you know, you come to some of these other fireworks shows, not to, you know, poo-poo them. I mean, everybody's trying to do them their best, and I know some people don't have the same budget that they have down there, but we got to get it going here. Let's get some action, you know? And there was a lot of action in that fireworks competition. I mean, obviously, because they're trying to show out for whoever the heck's judging that thing. I mean, I don't know how you even judge those competitions.
I don't know how they judge. Again, thanks to Mayor Dyster, Niagara Falls, for tuning in.
Got off on a tangent there,
yeah,
didn't
you did.
I?
That was okay. We need tangents once in a while. Thanks to Mayor Dyster for tuning into the show, sending that nice tweet in. And, you know, we didn't mention one more plug for Niagara Falls, USA, Niagara Falls, New York. The restaurants are really good in Niagara Falls, New York, Chris. They really are. Much better than the chain restaurants that are all over Niagara Falls, Canada. You know, you can find really good, authentic local restaurants in Niagara Falls, New York.
I would agree with you.
We should have mentioned that to Adrian Waddle. We're not talking about restaurants. We're talking about the Bills and Jets. Which team is ready to compete, more ready to compete for a wild card spot, Jets or Bills? On the tweet sheet, we'll start with Marty Rogers. He tweets this in. The Bills have an established coaching staff and a culture which gives them an advantage. Adding talent around Josh should pay dividends this year. I expect improvement in a run game and more big plays in the passing game. That's a big difference between the Bills and the Jets, right? A coach and a coaching staff going into its third year here and a brand-new coaching staff with New York. I think that is a factor when you compare these two teams.
Yes, I would agree. The way I look at this whole thing is who's further along, you know, in terms of building this thing? And we're talking about year three now. Under Coach McDermott, there are more pieces intact from a coaching staff perspective. You've got 10 of 11 starters returning on defense, and you can't say the same thing with respect to the Jets. New head coach, new offensive system for Sam Darnold to learn now. That's going to take some time. And he's got a new receiving core on top of that, you know, in the form of Jamison Crowder, their new slot receiver. Bellamy's a kid they brought over from Chicago, probably going to play a lesser role. But there are a lot more elements that have to be fitted together there, at least in my opinion, than here. And I would argue, and granted, it's not a finished product. It's going to have to be all fit together. But I would argue that the Bills' offensive line right now looks better than the Jets' offensive line, who are still searching for a bona fide center. They have the young kid, Jonathan Harrison, but they don't have a bona fide center there. Great that you got Le'Veon Bell. Who's blocking for him? You know what I mean? So, yep. To me, I think the Bills are further along in their build to being a perennial contender than the Jets, who I think, much like the Bills did last year, are going to have to take a little bit of a step back this year, even with the talent they acquired, because of the coaching changes, the scheme changes. Those all take time to implement, and when you have a bunch of new players, too, that's just too much change there to pull it all together in a 16-game season, I think.
Are the Bills or the Jets more ready to compete for a wild card spot? From the tweet sheet from John Whitfield, he says, well, the Jets sign more splashy free agents. The Bills sign more team culture players. And who would you rather have at coach, Gase or McDermott? He claims, John Whitfield, McDermott is worth two extra wins. It's a lot of wins just to hang on the coach. I don't know how to quantify that.
I believe good coaches can get you a couple more wins a year. I mean, what would you say Belichick is worth the Patriots every year? How many
one
wins?
Or two.
Yeah, probably two wins a year.
Yeah.
So instead of being 10-6, now you're 12-4. I mean, that's a big swing.
Yeah.
That's being that goes. I mean, that puts you from being in a category probably with like four or five other teams in your conference to at the top of your conference and getting home field advantage. I mean, that you say, oh well, two games. Well, when you're only playing 16, that's pretty important.
Pretty good. Call here from Andy in Hamburg. Hello, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andy.
I want to say that I love The Murphy Show, and it's a great show to listen to. Most important in your show is Greg Cosell's segments. He's detailed. He's informative. He really knows what he's looking at. 3 weeks ago, you guys were at the Combine, and you were talking about Metcalf. And Metcalf. And off his cuff, Cosell says, well, have you seen Butler? And when Butler's name was mentioned by Cosell, my brain went on fire because the best rookie receiver we ever had caught four touchdown passes the opening game against the Jets. Today, I see the broadcast, and I see the list of names. I see Butler's name on that, and neither you, John, I know, Chris, you weren't there. It was Tasker who was there that day. Neither of you today bothered to ask about that receiver. More importantly, Cosell never mentioned him either.
Yeah, and I mean, I know a little bit about Hakeem Butler. I've watched him, saw a couple of Big 12 games. He's, you know, Iowa State kid. Big, tall receiver, can make difficult catches above the rim, good in contested situations. Where he has an issue is where a lot of big receivers have an issue, and that's with transitioning in and out of his breaks. It's very hard for tall receivers to drop their weight and quickly get in and out of a break, and he has that issue. Is that going to keep him from getting drafted? Obviously not, but there seem to be, just in the people that I've talked to, a wide range of opinions. Some people love him. Some people have some reservations about him. I mean, if you want to put a highlight reel together of his best catches and that's all you watch, you're going to love him. You're going to think he can do anything on a football field. But there are instances where the consistency with his hands are not always there, and he's got giant hands. I think he measured over, I think it was 10 inches, maybe a little bit bigger for hand size.
He's big.
He's a big guy.
6'6".
So, you know, where is he going? I've seen him projected anywhere from late second to early fourth. So I think that's just an indication on the wide range of opinion on what he, not only what he is, but what they think he can be in the NFL. And I think because of that, you're going to have 32 teams potentially with very, very varying grades on him.
Thanks, Andy, and I agree with you about Greg Cosell's contributions to our show. In fact, during the last break, right after we finished up with Greg, we were talking about how methodical he is, how hard he works at this, just grinding tape. That's all he does down there at his office in New Jersey at NFL Films. He's a grinder, and that's where he comes up with all those good observations. Thanks for tuning in. Call here from David in Tonawanda. Go ahead, David. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Just a question on the availability or tradability. I was looking ahead and next year's free agent list, and I noticed the name A.J. Green, and would he fit right in that X spot we need? And which, you know, since he doesn't really have a history of doing what New England did, trading players before their contract expires, but what do you guys think? Is it something you look at, or do you kind of just wait to see what you have with the competition and then worry about it next offseason?
I would worry about it next offseason, consider it next offseason. I think they would rather get an affordable receiver on his rookie contract and have to assume a big contract or maybe even negotiate a big contract with A.J. Green. Very talented. He's not young anymore. I think they'd rather have a young guy who's more affordable. What do you think, Chris?
I wonder where it's going to go because, you know, next season, we're talking the 2020 season, that'll be his 10th year in the league, 31-year-old guy. You know, has stayed relatively healthy. I know he had a couple of injuries that put him out in the last two seasons for a time. He had that hamstring injury, missed the Bills game. When did he miss a Bills game? I want to say he missed a Bills game.
Did he play one play?
He played one play and then went out with a hamstring injury. Yeah, it was a while ago. They all kind of blend together. But, I mean, he's a dynamic player. He would qualify as a number one receiver, and I think you could even consider him that at age 31. You know, as we all know, it's going to come down to money. And knowing that that contract's probably going to be the last big one he signs, what is he looking for? What's the market value? You know, Julio Jones is about to set the market here at about $20 million a season for a wide receiver. And I know the Bills have a ton of cap room next year, but they also have a lot of the reason for that is because they have a lot of contracts coming off their books. LeSean McCoy, Jerry Hughes, you know, players like this that are in the last year of their contract that are up near the high end of the Bills' team salary cap structure. So, you know, there are going to be other openings on the roster that are going to have to be considered in addition to maybe trying to nail down that number one receiver role. That's far off in the distance. I think it's just hard to make a call on it now. I like A.J. Green, though, for what it's worth. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't mind having him on my team, no question.
All right, thanks for your call. We're going to take a break. Chris and I coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown is in for Steve Tasker. Steve should be back next Monday. We anticipate he will be. I wonder if I'll hear from him before he comes back.
I'm going to go with ready. No.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no, too. Maybe I should reach out to him over the weekend. Hey, coming up at 2, Ben Ostrow is going to join us, editor-in-chief of footballzebras.com. He's the author of the book, So You Think You Know Football. He's an officiating expert, a rules expert. And we got some stuff to talk about, Brownie. There's the owners meeting in Arizona coming up this weekend, starts Sunday. And they've got some proposals on the table to discuss, including an expansion of replay. Exactly what I did not want to see is on the table. Using replay, among other proposals, using replay to help officiate pass interference, a direct response to the Rams-Saints game, right? The NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I don't like when replay is being introduced for judgment calls.
Me neither.
And pass interference is a judgment call. Believe me, I get just as bent out of shape about bad judgment calls as the next person. But I think the bottom line here is there's human error in officiating, and it's going to happen. And as much as it sucked for the New Orleans Saints, is just as much as it sucked for the Bills in 2015 when we're over there in London and Nickell Robey-Coleman gets called for a pass interference when he didn't even touch the guy. And it leads to a first down for Jacksonville. They go down the field and kick a game-winning field goal or a touchdown or whatever it was after the Bills came back from a 28-3 deficit to take the lead. 31-28, they lose that game in horrific and depressing fashion. But you got to get over it because there are going to be bad calls in every game.
Yeah.
So if we keep trying to, you know, I respect the stance of let's get everything right, but we also want to finish a game within 3 hours and 10 minutes. If you're going to take a look at every pass interference call, if you're going to take a look at every spot of the ball on fourth down, which is a proposal that Denver brought up, if you're going to review every two-point try, if you're going to review every scoring play that gets negated by a penalty, I mean, we're going to be sitting around at 5:30 for a 1 o'clock game waiting for it to finish.
I mean, beyond the time element, which is a factor, though, I don't want to see the league go down that rabbit hole of replay adjudicating everything, and that's where you're headed.
You can't fix everything.
You cannot fix everything. It won't be perfect. Now, it's important to note that the proposal that will be discussed at the owners' meetings this weekend, Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, I guess it'll be, would not have fixed the Rams-Saints Nickell Robey-Coleman pass interference call because that was a non-call.
Right.
So this does not include non-calls. You can't challenge a non-call, which is good. But just introducing it in terms of judgment calls, I think, is a mistake. And we'll talk with obviously, as the afternoon goes along, we'll talk with Ben Ostrow about it in the next hour. Got a call on the line from Jim in East Aurora. Hello, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing well.
That's good. Hey, I just have one question and a comment. Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean's contract, do they run consequential to each other? And also, when are they due? You know, when are they expire? And when do you think it'd be a good time to renew them? Because I just think that they've, or extend them, I should say. I just think they've both done a great job.
I don't know those. Do you know those answers?
No. I want to say 5. For some reason, 5 years is sticking in my head for McDermott, but I don't know the answer to that. No.
Which
and
would
I don't.
2 years left.
I would assume they run in concert with one another. That would make a lot of sense. But I do not recall the length. I cannot remember. So we can try to get to work on our various sources and see if we can find an answer for you, but I don't know off the top of my head. I don't remember.
Too early now to think about extensions, would you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can see what the two of them are building, and all the signs are encouraging right now. I think the organization, and I think Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean are ready to win this year. I mean, I think obviously the expectation is you want to win every year, but with the construction of this roster and the way it was going, you know, I think there were a lot of us that expected the team to take somewhat of a step back in year two after they overachieved in year one, and we saw that, you know, especially with the rookie quarterback and the juggling that happened there at the beginning of the season. Now, you know, with the additions you've made, hopefully with a draft class that adds even more talent, second-year quarterback who's growing every week, you know, I think they're looking to win, compete, and be a postseason contender. They want to be there at the end and playing games in January. I think that's where they were kind of seeing this going in year three. I think at some point in year three, the hope is that the team reaches critical mass where they're playing consistent winning football every single week. There's a lot to pull together here. I mean, don't make any mistake about it. You know, you look at all the additions on offense, that all has to be melded together in sure. some way, shape, or form, and preferably before you even reach midseason, which sometimes is easier said than done. But I think based on where they see the team going, I think if the results match the expectations, yeah, you're probably talking extension as you get close to the end of this season.
We'll see.
What do you think?
Interesting question. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it right now would be a little early. Let's see what this year does. They are certainly pointed in the right direction. Got off to a really good start with a 9-win first season. And as you mentioned, I think a certain amount of retrenchment was inevitable for that group, or for this group last season. And now, the moves they made last week in free agency indicate where Bean and McDermott think this team is and where it's headed. I mean, they're ready to move now, ready to get going now, ready to start winning now. And I think most of us look at it and think, yeah, it's time. This year is the time to start winning. I'm not saying winning Super Bowls yet, but certainly winning. What do you think, caller? You're still on the line with us there?
Yes, I am. Well, I know this as I'm proud to be a Bills fan again. I mean, I don't hang my head when I talk about the Bills anymore. I've been watching them a long time.
Well, that's good. That's step one. Thanks, Jim, in East Aurora. We're going to take a break here. We're going to talk about officiating when we return. You can also weigh in on our question of the day. Which team, Bills or Jets, is most ready to compete for a wild card spot this year? Give us a, that kind of goes to Jim's question, doesn't it? 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Back with more One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.